I'm Carol Hills, and you're with The World. Family separation is something no one wants to witness or experience. But we haven't been able to escape the issue these past few months after thousands of families were split up by U.S. authorities at the southern border. Throughout this week, we brought you stories about other instances of family separation, from boarding schools that Native American children were forced to attend, to a toddler left behind to grow up in the Philippines without her parents. Today, we want to tell you about a community hit hard by another type of family separation. This one has its roots in President Trump's travel ban. Here's The World's Shirin Jafari.
When I recently called up Zaid Nagy, he was mad.
There is real pain here. There is real suffering. I'm in direct contact with people whose life has been destroyed.
Nagy is talking about the Yemeni community here in the States. And as the head of the Yemeni American Merchants Association in New York City, he's constantly hearing how President Trump's travel ban is separating Yemeni American families.
I just received a call this morning from a gentleman who we've been working with for a while. His family is in three different parts of the world. His daughter and his wife is in Djibouti.
Djibouti, the small country in Africa. That's where the closest U.S. embassy is to Yemen.
His older children are with him here in the Bronx, where he works. He owns a cell phone store. And he has a little kid that he can't take care of. He's staying with people in Michigan. That's one story.
I also have a story. He goes on. There's the Yemeni American grocery store owner in New York whose three children got U.S. visas, but their mom didn't.
Now he's stuck taking care of the kids and working and paying for the mom who's not allowed in.
Last June, while the Supreme Court was debating whether President Trump's travel ban is constitutional, the government argued it is, because it considers exceptions, or what's known as a waiver. Serene Shobaya is a civil rights lawyer in Washington, D.C.
The ban says that there is a case-by-case waiver process through which every individual visa applicant will be considered according to three factors.
Like if the ban causes the applicant, quote, undue hardship, if the person doesn't pose a security threat, and if granting a visa is in the interest of the U.S. But here's the thing. These waivers are rare. Hundreds of families from the banned countries have been waiting in limbo for months for waivers. Shabaya says the government hasn't clearly explained how the waiver process works.
It's become very, very clear that there is no waiver process. People are not getting individualized consideration, and they're not even getting the opportunity to submit documents that would demonstrate that they meet the three criteria outlined in the proclamation for a waiver.
Now, Shabaya and other lawyers are suing the government on behalf of these families. Meanwhile, the stories of families struggling to reunite keep piling up.
I have my brother.
Like that of Mahmoud Salem, a 31-year-old Yemeni-American man whose family was stuck in Djibouti for about a year.
Mahmoud Salem, M-A-M-O-O-N.
His brother Mahmoud told me Mahmoud moved to the U.S. in 2004 following his father's footsteps. Their father had moved to Michigan years ago to work at a Ford factory.
You know, and my dad worked in Ford Motor for over 35 years.
Salem got married in Yemen, but came to the U.S. alone to make money, save until his wife and kids could leave Yemen and join him in the U.S. But Salem's brother, Mamoun, says he struggled financially.
He don't have like a degree or something to work in a good place to make good money, you know.
Salem stuck it out in Michigan for 14 years. He would visit his family as often as he could. Over time, he and his wife had five kids. Finally, 5 years ago, Salem decided it was time to bring his wife and children to the States. He started the visa process, filled out forms, got vaccinations. Meanwhile, a civil war broke out in Yemen. There was chaos, food shortages, and a cholera outbreak. In 2015, the U.S. shut down its embassy.
There's airplanes, there's wars, there's lack of a government, there is lack of police.
Zaid Nagy again with the Yemeni American Merchants Association. He knows Salem's family.
It's like death is awaiting you. And if you evade it in one corner, it's coming to you from the other corner.
Salem's family was in Djibouti, trying to get U.S. visas. But the cost of living there is skyrocketing. And Salem was struggling to support his family from Louisiana, where he worked at a grocery store. This is what he would tell Mamoun, his brother.
I need a lot of money. I can't go see them. I cannot take them back to Yemen. I cannot bring them here. What kind of life is this?
Mamon says his brother borrowed at least $7,000 from him and his other brothers to pay the bills in Djibouti, and his wife and five children waited. Then, last month, in a video call with his family in Djibouti, Salem found out that his daughter was sick.
His daughter was in the hospital and they have no enough medicine in Djibouti. She had rash and a lot of red places on her skin.
A couple of hours after that call, Salem took his own life. It's difficult to know what exactly led to his death, but it happened as Salem was trying to cope with the stress of his family's visa situation.
Hello? Yes.
Lisa Fortuna is a psychiatrist who works with Hi. Refugees in Boston. She says for many of the refugees she sees, their number one goal is to bring their families to the U.S., often away from war or refugee camps. But the travel ban is making that impossible.
And so in the last few weeks, when or after the ban was upheld, I had a lot of families come in very distressed, very depressed. And I think it adds to a level of hopelessness. And that becomes a very significant risk factor for suicidal behavior, the hopelessness and despair, that there's not going to be any resolution of the separation from your family.
Paul Spiegel, who directs the Center for Humanitarian Health at Johns Hopkins University, says immigrants and refugees have always been prone to depression and anxiety. Some experience trauma at home or on the journey here. Then there's the stress of starting out in a new country and learning a different language.
I think what is different now is the uncertainty, the changing of the rules and the laws, the aggressiveness of ICE. There was more certainty in the past, and I think that will exacerbate mental health issues and can even create some mental health issues.
After Salem's death, an immigration lawyer helped bring attention to his family's case. His wife and children were granted visas, but they didn't arrive in the U.S. in time for Salem's funeral. His brother, Mamoun, is taking care of them for now. I asked him how they're coping. The hardest part, he said, was picking them up at the airport.
His son starts looking, you know, around and cannot see his father, you know.
They're still coming to terms with what happened, he says, and restarting life in the U.S. without their dad. For The World, I'm Shirin Jafari.